The thing for me is I was in a professional world with other students and residents and all that stuff. And so, as you know, when you put yourself out there, there is this kind of thought that, oh, once I post this on Facebook or I put this out there, everyone's going to see it.
There's over 1.9 million podcasts. Most of them never see the results they expected. They want to monetize, but their show ends up costing them money and they never achieve the listenership they desire. This show will help you launch, grow, monetize, and inspire with your podcast. Get ready to take notes, because here's your host, Adam Adams.
And we're back with another episode of the Podcast on Podcasting. It's your host, Adam, AAA Adams, and really excited because Taylor Brana was recently interviewed on his show. I think it'll come out around the same time that this is coming out. So you definitely want to look for the Happy Doc podcast, and you'll see an episode of me right around the same time this is coming out. So that should be fun. Just jump over or go to the Happy Doc podcast. And interestingly enough, with Taylor, he has actually already got like 5 or 6 podcasts going. He's trying to create some type of massive, what would you call it? I want to call it like kingdom, but that's the wrong term for it.
We're calling it like a system or a network. Yeah. And we'll get into details about that. Yeah, but like a system or network for education.
Okay. Well, kingdom definitely sounds cooler. I think you should maybe switch it to kingdom.
All right. Well, I'm going to put the humble hat on, but you can 100% call it kingdom, and I'm not going to fault you for it. So,
all right,
you
know, good.
If you want to be the hype man behind the scenes, I'm all for that.
I will hype it for sure. Taylor Brana is a psychiatrist. He is a former NCAA competitive gymnast, and he said that he did like every type of meet, or what are they called?
Equipment or event.
Every event. Yeah, because I was a track and field star. Like, I won't put on my humble hat. I was super good at it.
Okay.
But I did gymnastics when I was little. And so I remember learning how to do like handsprings and walking on my hands, and even tried a couple of the events that you're good at. And I got to one thing. I'm trying to remember the name of it. It's basically like the first move that you have to do just to get on the rings. A muscle up. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you did the rings, you did the parallel bars, you did pommel horse.
Pommel
right?
horse. Yep.
And the rings. Yeah. That's just a muscle up. You're like, okay, well, you haven't even started yet. You just right. kind of get there. For me, I was really proud that I did a muscle up. I did a bar muscle up once, and I've done a few ring muscle ups. I'm sure if I like practice and did a couple of pull ups for like, I don't know, we'll call it 2 months, I could definitely get to another muscle up.
Muscle ups are hard. I started when I was 6. I only mastered the muscle up when I was 8. So it did take me 2 years.
Okay. So you were 8 and I was like 30 when I did my first one. So that's pretty remarkable. I did CrossFit. Have you ever done CrossFit?
I've done some of the things in CrossFit. I mean, there's definitely a little bit of overlap, right? Like if you watch CrossFit, there's handstand pushups. They do those like muscle up, or they're kind of kipped. I don't know if you know the terminology, but they kind of do muscle ups with a little bit of swing on like the bars.
You can do it without the swing?
Yeah.
That is not what I was doing. It was like a giant kip and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm up. I did it.
Right. So if you're talking about gymnasts, do it from a strict, like in still position, that's a real muscle up. So when we watch CrossFitters,
I can't tell if you're being offensive on purpose or...
I'm not trying to sound pompous. I'm telling you, if you want to actually like show off your strength, and if you do a true muscle up, it actually should be from hang. So again, there's just differences in the way you're taught. That's again, like it's advanced. It's difficult. You know, when I watch those guys do the CrossFit muscle ups, I'm like, it's not real, but we'll give it to you. You know what I mean?
Okay. Well, then I've never done a real muscle up. Never done a real one. That's okay. I'm humbled by you and I appreciate it. And so you are also an entrepreneur. You've interviewed over 100 guests on your variety of podcasts, including happiness, business innovation. And also Taylor is a co-contributor to the book Voice Technology in Healthcare. He's a creator and manager of several podcasts, including the Happy Doc, the one that I was just on. And you're going to jump over there. You're going to listen to an episode or two and give him an honest review. I know I ask that whenever I have a great guest on, but it really does a lot for the guest as you just jump over there, give an honest rating and review just based on what you heard off one or two podcast episodes. So jump over there, listen to that. And Taylor hopes to inspire the listeners to discover their own fulfilled and successful journey in life. Taylor, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here, and hopefully we continue to have an awesome conversation.
Yeah, because already talking about how I couldn't even really do a real muscle up already is starting this off really, really well, I think, for sure. So you're in residency right now. What does that mean?
Yeah, so for those who don't know, basically in medical training, after college, you have to go into post-grad. So you apply to medical school. Once again, medical school, that's 4 years. And then you go into residency. At the end of medical school, you decide on a specialty. I went into psychiatry, which I had no actual desire to go into until later in the whole process. And I'm really excited I chose the specialty. And then I went into residency. For psychiatry residency, it's 4 years, and I'm at the end of my fourth year. So basically, I've done 12 additional years of schooling after high school. So I like to joke and say I'm in 24th grade right now.
24th.
Yeah. So I'm in 24th grade right now, and I'm almost done with school, which is crazy. And so, yeah, that's a little bit of spiel about residency.
So you're doing psychiatry, and if you could correct me if I'm wrong here, you start by doing like medical, I can't even think of the name of it, med school. Correct. And then as you're getting ready to pick something, you can pick anesthesiology or all of these other doctor things, but you could also do doctor of the mind. But you had to learn how to draw blood before you could even become a psychiatrist?
Yeah. So basically, for all intents and purposes, so in medical school, you're learning all of the basic science, knowledge, education. If you ever see a physician technically should know all about the body and the basics of functioning body versus like disease states. Okay. And then once you start to pick a specialty, obviously you're going to go into a more focus. So when you see like a specialist, like family medicine doctor, they're going to be more general. You see the emergency doctor, they're going to definitely know all the emergency situations really well. When you see a pediatrician, you know, you expect them to really know everything about children. So you get very specialized. Even in psychiatry as a resident, the first year, we still do have many months where I had to do an emergency medicine rotation. I had to do an internal medicine rotation in the hospital. So we still had to do a lot of those skills that you would stereotypically think of for medicine. And a lot of people don't know this, but there's a tremendous amount also of medicine just a psychiatrist. So for example, if I work in an inpatient psychiatric ward, that doesn't mean that I'm not also managing or helping with high blood pressure, diabetes, kidney issues, anything under the sun really that would be medical. So I'm still managing that. Sometimes I might not know all of the answers, so I will consult out to other specialists, but we still do manage medical issues. And then on top of that, we're also simultaneously going to be taking care of those other things that come up for psychiatry, such as depression, mood disturbance, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, drug abuse, and many other possible scenarios. But we also manage that simultaneously. So it's a pretty complex field, and I definitely appreciate it. Yeah.
So you're busy enough with your 24th year of school. So why exactly are you managing I think you called it a kingdom or a network of podcasts, like six different castles in your kingdom. Why exactly are you spending all that extra time with the podcasting? How does that benefit you?
Yeah. So it's interesting because medical school is incredibly tough. And even, you know, I like to say first, I'm not a doctor first, I'm a human first, right? So even through my journey of life, whatever I end up going into, I'm still Taylor underneath it all. And who I am really is I love building stuff. I feel like I'm really creative. I have a lot of energy. I like to kind of do different things. Like I've always enjoyed growing up. I used to play piano. I was in sports. And there's just so many different facets to me. And the one thing I didn't like about med school is it was so time consuming that I really felt like I lost myself. So that's one of the kind of the concepts of why the Happy Doc came out, because I felt like I'm going into this thing and I'm not going to be able to be a happy doctor. So that's where the title even comes from. It was me searching out happy doctors so that I could interview them so I could learn how to get back to that for myself, right? What ended up happening initially is kind of the podcasting thing was not something I directly thought I was going to do initially. I basically reached out to some doctors and they were awesome mentors. And I'm like, what is a way I could almost take these conversations and blast them out into the atmosphere and let other people listen to it? So I always naturally really like talking to people. I loved asking questions. I loved to do the interview stuff. And I was doing that for myself. And then obviously kind of learned a little bit more about the game, learned about how to actually do this stuff. And through that time, I was like, let's put this out to the world. Now, I've found just by undertaking that process, I actually started in med school and made me happier and made me more energetic. I got really excited to kind of turn off my logic side of my brain and kind of go into that flow mode and just really enjoy things. And so ultimately what it does for me, it helps me stay excited in medicine because I have sort of that balance point for myself to kind of teeter off of the logic brain and turn on that creative side or that artistic side. So I feel like I get a lot of that. Like even right now with you, I'm in the flow, I'm in the zone, I'm enjoying it. And that's kind of now become a little bit more, I would say, compounded in that, like, I've enjoyed it so much. I like to share that with other people. I want to build out other things to have other individuals be involved and stay educated. And that's kind of where spinoff or other ideas and concepts for podcasts are coming from.
I was wondering, and I really almost hesitate to even bring this up because I still want you to air the episode, especially because we've been talking about it, but I'm not a doctor. I don't know if you knew that, but I'm not a doctor. I've only gone to school for a little over 12 years, not 24. But I was wondering, like, what is the benefit to you or your podcast or your listener to have someone like me on your show? Because I think I was interviewed for the Happy Doc. Is that right?
Right.
So tell me, what is kind of like the benefit to you, your listener, or just the podcast by having me on your show?
You know, as you asked that, I think I just got to nix your episode, huh?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I should probably not bring it up at all.
No, I'm joking. So the Happy Doc, even though like that's the title, I think it's evolved over time. Initially, it was about just inspiring students and physicians. But I really do think one of the issues I see in medicine specifically, or anyone in a professional world, is if you're a lawyer or if you're in a specific specialty, you get siloed. And so what ends up happening is, like, for example, if I'm always hanging out with, let's say, family doctors, or I'm always with internal medicine doctors or whatever, you're having the same conversations, you're going to the clinic, you're hearing the same stuff. So when I have someone like you on, for example, a professional podcasting, like, you really know your stuff, you know about the business end, you know about the marketing end, all of those little pieces, my idea is really, and you might have the same kind of concept, it's if you listen to a podcast episode, and you don't even have to listen the whole thing, but you just get through one segment, and you're like, that just gave me an idea. And then your brain goes off and uses that to apply to your field or whatever you do. That's what it's really all about, right? I could care less, honestly, if you hop on. I would love for you to do it, to hop on and listen to the whole episode. But maybe there's just one nugget, one moment, one time that's inspirational, right? So for you as a professional that does podcasting, maybe that episode is going to inspire a student, a professional, a lawyer, anyone really, to say, wait a second, maybe this is something I can consider, or how can I apply that knowledge or that piece to my field? How can I take that? So it's kind of expanded. Like, I did focus specifically on only physicians, but then again, if I speak to other professionals, other people who are doing interesting things, you know, there could be that one nugget that just changes someone. And so that's kind of how it's really evolved for me. And so I think that a conversation with someone like you who knows your stuff in a different field can be exceptionally valuable. And I think it can go a long way.
I appreciate you going through that. And I think that is beneficial to other podcasters as well, because some of us, me in particular, I'm definitely there. I've been doing real estate for so many years, like real estate investing for years and years and years. And I had a podcast for like 4 years before I sold it in real estate investing. And after a while, I was like, man, I'm just having the exact same conversations all the time. I'm not learning. I'm not growing or developing. After 4 years of interviewing people with the same exact questions, you know what I mean? I started to feel like I wanted a little bit more. And I think that any of us are going to feel that way. You may have felt that way. I'm not sure. But as you were doing the Happy Doc podcast in the beginning, it was like, you know, maybe I could grow more if I expanded more. So I definitely think it's going to be beneficial for another podcaster to hear that and internalize that and hopefully get to the next place.
Yeah. Can I comment on that for a second?
Oh, yeah. Please do.
Yeah, I just want to say, like, just to follow up on that, I think I definitely felt that way. And I think one of the tricky parts is when you're developing your idea or concept, one part of you wants to niche down and make it really specific. But like you said, if it makes you so stagnant, like for me, if you're not excited, I feel like I should always have a little bit sense of excitement about the conversation, right? There should be a sense of, oh, what am I going to discover next? And I think like, if you've kind of dug into the same hole and you're getting the same answers and responses, maybe that you need to expand that a little bit. And I definitely felt that way. So the one thing I wanted to always make sure for me that was important, regardless of the success of the podcast, is am I enjoying the process? Because for me, the podcast, like the Happy Duck specifically, is kind of like my playground. Like I always want to be able to jump in the sand and build my castle, so, or my kingdom, so to speak. So I think that's really important for anyone listening. I think it's, what are your goals? And part of that, if you still want to stay excited and energetic about it, like I do, it was going to be really important for me to expand the guests I had.
Awesome. I have a ton of questions that are queued up. Really, I heard you say you get this side load. You said something like when you're maybe an attorney and you're always in that field, you get this, and I put in quotes, side load. And other professionals might get that as well. And physicians get this thing called side load. I had never heard of it before you mentioned it. What does it mean and what does it do?
Yeah, no, I just want to clarify. I use the word siloed, like, like you're siloed out. Like
now I get it.
Like you're in an echo chamber.
I've heard of siloed. I don't know what I was thinking when you said that before, but I thought you said side load. And I was like, never heard of that.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, siloed. You're kind of like, we used to have a silo, by the way. When I grew up on a tree farm, and we actually had a giant silo, and I used to climb to the top of it. My dad would not let me climb to the top of it, but I did all the time.
So that's very strange, however, also adventurous of you. So I hope the view was nice.
It had to have been like 80 feet tall or something. And I was like very, very small. I was like 10 years old and I definitely could have died, but I used
to climb
up.
Well, you're still here today and we're doing this interview. So I'm glad you took some precaution in that climb.
I was holding on for dear life. Absolutely. I feel like if my dad would have said, please climb up there, I'd be like, no, no, I don't want to climb up there. But when he goes, make sure you never climb up on that thing. And I was like, I'm going to just climb up it. I don't know why, but there's got to be this reverse psychology. Do you use any reverse psychology? Speaking of psychiatrists and silos, and do you use any psychology and or reverse psychology as you're podcasting or trying to get guests on podcasts?
I mean, I think reverse psychology is definitely an aspect of lots of people's personality, right? Kind of like for you, for example, you just told me your secret, which is there's a part of you that's always kind of seeking out to be more, especially when someone says you can't. Right. And I think that definitely fits into a lot of entrepreneurs, like the chip on your shoulder, the moment that you didn't succeed.
Wait, you're saying I have a chip on my shoulder?
I'm not saying that.
And you have a degree, so everyone's going to believe you now.
I'm not saying that about you specifically, but I have it too. Like there is a sense of if someone tells me I can't accomplish someone that's like, oh, well, I'll show you. There's a little bit of that aspect to it. We don't have to go too deep into that. But if I knew someone or a patient or whomever where I could leverage that to help them get to something successful for themselves or bring awareness that that's happening for them, because I'll give you an example of where this can backfire is if you have the whole, like, I told you so rebelliousness type of personality, but sometimes what happens is people do things that they don't even want to do because they're trying to prove it to that one person that told them that. But if you've spent years and years of your life doing something and trying to get better at something that you don't even want to do because you're trying to prove it to your ex or your parent or whomever, then that's not important in your life's path. So one of the things I'm really passionate about is trying to align people and coordinate them to what their real wants and desires are in life. We get one life, we get 80, 85, sometimes shorter, sometimes longer, who knows where we're going to head to in the future. But it's not just about the quantity, it's also the alignment of that. To get back to your question, yeah, if I see that I can challenge someone in a way that's going to be beneficial to them, I'll definitely do that.
Good stuff. I appreciate it. I have only one more question before we dive into the podcasting questions.
Sure.
What's the difference between a psychologist and a psychiatrist?
Great question. I get that a lot. And basically, a psychologist has gone through years and years of training. They get something called a PsyD, which is a doctor in psychology. They learn all about different forms of therapy and speaking to people. They have a very deep focus in someone's history, getting to know them, understanding the situation, and really trying to be supportive. And there's many different forms of therapy. So I'm not going to speak to you exactly the therapy that you might get from someone, but I will say they go through a tremendous amount of training for that. Psychiatrists go through that training as well. My program, we do a lot of therapy and a lot of psychology training, but on top of that, psychiatrists are very much so trained in what medications or pharmacologic treatments can be used for very specific diseases that might not be able to be tackled with just speaking or just talking or just coaching.
Mm-hmm. Say that again. Which one?
So psychiatrists can prescribe meds and psychologists cannot. That's the very basic form of this. But I'll give you a really easy example of this. Let's say someone's depressed and they go and they see a psychologist, and a lot of people just call them their therapist. They see the psychologist and they've tried everything. They've maybe seen several therapists at this point. They've talked things out and nothing's getting better for them. Well, maybe there is a component of this depression that really needs to be lifted with something that can help from the medication standpoint. I'm very conservative about this. I don't like to just jump to putting medications on someone, but there are times when, and I've had this in several cases, where we just start a medication and then all of a sudden the depression gets better. And then that also helps them in therapy talk about certain issues they weren't able to talk about before, or maybe their mood just lifts so they can go out and walk outside or go exercise or have a better relationship with someone. So psychiatrists and psychologists often work together in tandem. But again, the psychiatrists are the ones that can prescribe meds.
Got it. So I remember I personally was overweight. I've lost a lot of weight in the last couple of years. I was totally overweight and I was drinking lots of beers and I was depressed, and I was not really depressed, but I was overworked. I was absolutely overworked. I hate saying the word depressed when you're a psychiatrist. You're like, you don't even know what depressed is. But I was definitely like snapping at my kids, drinking too much and way overweight. And all of those things kind of got me down and down and down and down. Mm-hmm. Like I wasn't going outside as much. And because I wasn't outside as much, I was less happy and all of this kind of stuff. Then I like start losing weight and I'm like, oh, okay, well, now I can play with my kids more. Now that I'm playing with my kids more, they're a little bit more happy. So it's like, maybe what you're saying, like you prescribe the medicine that allows them to get over some things and be able to get outside more. And then they might not even need the medicine anymore because they're exercising more, they're outside more, or something like that, where some of those other things also help us not feel so down. And it's kind of like upward spiral.
100%. And I tell patients this all the time. The basic things are basics. If you're not drinking enough water, if your nutrition isn't right, if your sleep is off, and then the number one antidepressant that we often forget is exercise. Just general exercise. There's various forms, but the endorphins you get from that, that's fantastic. And that can often lead to a very positive cycle. So all of those little pieces, you want to optimize those things before we even necessarily have to jump to something like medication. But with all those things being said, like you said, you don't know what piece of the puzzle is going to help unlock you. But as soon as you start to, it's like that positive loop, just like you can get in the negative loops. Mm-hmm. If you can just start that one habit that creates better habits and better loops for you, absolutely. Your mood's going to improve.
I guess I do have one more question, just because you said that exercise was kind of the number one thing for us to combat depression, to be more happy and to have those endorphins. Out of curiosity, if I could only give you two different exercises, gymnastics and the rings and the parallel bars and the palm horse, those aren't going to count right now.
Yeah.
Just if I could say, is it running or deadlifts or squats? Is it going to be running or biking, or is it deadlifts or squats that's really going to make me the happiest that I can be?
So I'm going to make it a little bit more complex by answering and saying that it's going to depend on the person's preferences and what they enjoy. I'm a big believer that you should choose the movement that you enjoy and stay consistent and sustain over the long term. So like for my body type, they talk about like ectomorph, mesomorph, or endomorph. So the ectomorph is like the long, lanky type that's more an endurance type person. That person that maybe can't lift as much, but they're able to go and they'll be able to walk or run for long distances. Well, then maybe for that body type, we're looking at more of something that's more endurance for them. These people generally just enjoy more longer form exercises. Then you got the endomorph on the other end. These are the kind of like bulky people that maybe put on a lot of weight, but also can get a lot of muscle. Those are the types of people that maybe lifting is going to be like a better fit for them. And it's more enjoyable because also usually people tend to enjoy things they're good at. So like, are you going to enjoy running if you gas out after 2 minutes of a jog? No. So these things kind of come hand in hand. And then my body type is kind of that middle. I would say I'm like more of a mesomorph where I can kind of lift and I can kind of do endurance things. So I like to do different types of exercises, but I'm a big fan of rock climbing because it's kind of endurance and it's kind of strength. And I'm like pretty good with my body weight. So I'm able to manage that. So my answer is choose the exercise that you enjoy and that you think you can do like a few times a week and that you actually enjoy it. I think obviously I'm also a competitive person, so there's that aspect too. But if you just want something that you generally enjoy over the long haul, you want to find something that's going to work for your body type that you enjoy, that you think that you might be pretty good at and that you can sustain.
We just went climbing a few weeks ago and I'm terrible at it. I mean, I can climb up pretty fast, but my muscles get so burnt.
Totally.
Because of COVID, we had to like book it ahead of time. Mm-hmm. And they said, you can only come for 2 hours. And I was like, we're paying for an all day pass. They don't have 2 hour passes. It's just because of COVID, you pay for an all day pass, but you can only be there for 2 hours. And I was so mad.
Yeah,
so
that's
I was like,
up.
What a waste of money. And here I was climbing and I was 80% to the top and my sweetheart and I were going back and forth. She would belay me and we don't do the top rope stuff or we only do the top rope, not the lead climbing stuff. And so she's like belaying me and she's like done. She won't even do it anymore. So I climbed 3 times in a row, which was like 7 times in 2 hours. That's it.
Yeah.
Like my 7th one, I was like 80 or 90% up and they called on the intercom. They go, look, if they said something like, it's at the end of the time, start cleaning up. And I go, thank God, because I'll finish this. And it was like, I don't remember what the classes are because I'm not as good as you, but it was like a blank dot or blank period 7. Is it like a 10.7 or what do they call it?
Yeah, so they're usually like 10.7. I think there might be some 9s, but 9s are like
Then it would have been a 9.7. It would have been like a 9.7. And I was climbing up it and it was like kind of almost going out. And I was like, I said, just hold me. I need to like swing for a minute and just shake out my arms. Then I start climbing up and they go, hey, it's the end of time. And I'm like, I'm so glad we did the 2 hour time limit because climbing's freaking awesome. And my kids, we actually own all the equipment.
Oh, really?
So my kids, we own our shoes and our everything. Yeah. And I'm like certified and all that to belay my kids. So we go all the time with my kids. But this was the first time in like 20 plus years that I was climbing. Anyway, it was a lot of fun. I think the last time I had done it, I was probably 12 or 13 years old. So,
yeah, it's funny. As you're talking about that, I'm like, there's no way you can do it all day. Like you said, when you first start climbing, after like an hour, hour and a half, your forearms are just dead. It's impossible. And then the next day, they're just on fire. The truth is people who climb like long-term and long amounts of time, you have to build up that endurance for that. And it really takes me like, I have to climb probably 2 to 3 times a week consistently for my forearms to hit a point where I'm able to kind of keep up with that rate. But in the beginning, there's no way you can, even though you tell them that story, I'm like, there's no way you're going to do more than like an hour, hour and a half. You getting to the end, I pray for your forearms because I'm sure they were just completely
They were swollen. Like I couldn't pick up a pen without my forearm feeling like actually taking me back to that day. I do want to say one quick thing.
Yep.
Biking is my thing. It is the thing that I can sustain. It's the thing that I love. So it makes me the most happy because it's exhilarating. It's fun. You're getting your quads. You're getting your heart rate up. And it's just interesting because you could take any line on mountain biking and like go down this face of the mountain or all that. So mountain biking is the thing that I can definitely sustain. So to answer your question, that's what I would do. But as far as not letting you cop out with the it depends answer and talking about endomorphs and whatever those other two, and I'm probably even saying it wrong. Has it been proven that you get more endorphins that are longer term beneficial by doing squats or deadlifts versus long exercise? Like, is there better effects for it or is that not a thing?
If you had to choose one or the other, if you're looking to try to lose some weight over the long term and actually be able to eat like what you normally do, I actually think resistance training is better. And resistance training will increase your muscle mass, which makes you increase your metabolism, which means you get to burn more. So you get a lot of positive effects from there. For me personally, I think the running and long distance stuff is more of a supplement. But again, like I said, it is more complicated than that.
Okay, let's talk about podcasting. So question number one, what challenges did you have to overcome in order to start your podcast? The first one, I know you started like six and you're building this kingdom, this empire, but what in the beginning really was holding you back and you did overcome it?
Fear. The thing for me is I was in a professional world with other students and residents and all that stuff. And so, as you know, when you put yourself out there, there is this kind of thought that, oh, once I post this on Facebook or I put this out there, everyone's going to see it. Even though that's not actually true, the feeling of being exposed is very weird. And then also, like, what are my friends going to think? What are my family? What's my family going to think? What is my medical school possibly going to think if they find out? What are residencies going to think? What is the professional world going to think? And again, because all this content's recorded, like they could listen to what I think or, you know, all those things. So all that stuff goes in your mind. So I had to get over the fear of that. And I had to remind myself that I'm doing this for a positive reason. I'm not going out there to goof off and say like really inflammatory things and insult people. I'm here to do something that I hope will help people. If you're putting out content or deciding on something that might be a little bit more edgy or what have you, you have to face the consequences of that as well. But for me, I just had to get over the fear of the fact that this is something that I want to do. I know it's going to be good and I have to face the music of anyone who wants to talk to me about it and have to stick to my guns. So that was like the really big challenge initially.
What's one tip that you would give to somebody who wanted to do like an interview style podcast, having good guests, how to find them or where to find them or how to reach out to them or how to not worry if they, what's one tip of getting guests?
If you're just looking to get a guest, I think the biggest thing is to release the idea that it's hard. Because I think everyone builds up this idea like, oh, I can't have a conversation with so-and-so from this field, or I can't get in a conversation with this awesome person that I saw in an interview. In fact, sometimes really successful people that are very good at what they do often have open times in their schedule specifically for things like being interviewed. A lot of people that are very successful and great at what they do, they want to be interviewed. They want to talk about what they're excited about. They want to be able to hop onto a podcast. So I think you need to release the idea that it's hard. And then the step two is literally now it's 2021. Everyone's on these different platforms like LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Clubhouse now. Get away from the idea that you can't just DM someone, email them, try to get into the circle. It's not as hard. I've interviewed people that are worth like 8 or 9 figures. I've spoken to people like John Lee Dumas, who has like the Entrepreneurs on Fire podcast. He's like a really big deal. I didn't think I'd be able to in a million years talk to him. And then I just reached out and found a time that worked. He's like, let's do 15 minutes. And I'm like, okay, let's go.
What? The whole podcast was 15 minutes?
He could only set up 15 minutes at that time.
Okay.
And by the way, it went horrible because I was so nervous. I messed up everything, but that's a hilarious story by itself. Yeah, but it's not hard. And I talked to David Meltzer, who's like this really big guy in sports, and he's like inspirational coach, and he does so many great things. He's like a kind of a polymath guy. I Chase Jarvis, who's also really well known. He's really good friends with Tim Ferriss, if you know the Tim Ferriss podcast, and he's a Pulitzer Prize winning writer. I've got to talk to all these people. My point being is all it took was email, DMing, hey, not available right now. Not available right now doesn't mean no. Not available right now means let's circle back to my dream list of guests in 3 months and see how we're doing. So again, it's not hard. You just have to catch people at the right time. People love talking about themselves.
Love it.
Yeah, it's great.
That is super valuable. Like the two tips on getting good guests, where to find them, how to reach out to them, and just to kind of get over the fear. Just not to even concern about it.
It's scarier in your head than it actually is.
Love it. Love it. How about just a couple of podcast hacks, like things that have helped you either grow your podcast or support your podcast? Maybe it could even be like some type of, I use Calendly, for example. I'm not trying to have you say Calendly also, right. But what tools, tips, tricks, hacks have you learned over time that you'd like to share with a newer podcaster?
If you're trying to grow, I think the number one thing is just to get the consistent habit of doing the thing. So if you have the weekly schedule, just do weekly and keep with it. I often like having like blocked out times, but like you mentioned, Calendly is a great tool to coordinate with your schedule. And like, you want to make it really easy for other people. I would say just to start consistency. In terms of hacks for doing well and getting great content on the interview, I would just say it's really important to, even if it's short, just sit down and have like a notepad or like just take a little bit of time to study your guest. And I think the way you make an interview exciting is to actually be excited. And I think the way to get excited for an interview is just to like read about the person and ask really authentic questions that you're excited to ask about. Like, oh, I want to know about this. Like, oh, they did this. They were this athlete, or they went off and built this business. Like, how did you do that? You really want to just get into those details of being, if you really feel inside excited, the conversation, because everyone's listening to your emotion, your perspective, all that stuff, they're going to feel your excitement. So I think it's just get into the game, lock in, get to know the story, and then your guest is going to super appreciate you. And if you knock it out of the park and you have a great guest on, maybe they'll be impressed and try to help you on your journey. There's so many just really great aspects of spending 15, 20, 30 minutes studying the guest, getting into the questions you want to ask, and making sure you're prepared.
Very interesting. I'm not a giant preparer. I usually try to bring on people that I like that I've met, that I've seen around, but studying has never been my thing. I've always been like, that's why I probably didn't go to med school. It's because homework and what the best thing is, not the best thing, but what the best way of explaining my personality is that I'm frequently behind the eight ball. I try not to be, I don't want to be. But as far as like when I was doing homework, for example, it would always be, all right, I don't have to do it right now. I don't have to finish that today. And it's all procrastination. Then it's the time. And I liked how you mentioned something that kind of combats a little bit of the procrastination. You mentioned kind of either batching your episodes or just making sure that you block out time to be able to get the episodes done. How do you do it? Like, are you doing 5 episodes once a month, or do you do every Saturday, or how do you block that out?
It's going to get better now that I'm finishing residency. To be honest, for me, I've just literally had to keep my calendar open, block things out for my like work stuff, like for residency, and then whatever's open's open. The thing for me though, is like, this is like water to me. Like, I love podcasting. I love having these conversations. Like, this is fun. So for me, if someone wants to call me on Saturday at 3 o'clock, because that's a time that's open my calendar, like, let's do it. So for me, I've done that. I think what I plan to do, what I think is probably going to be better for me long-term to make this super sustainable, is I'd like to, for example, say, you know what, my Sundays from this time to this time, that's my time. Those are my times, and let's make it happen. Obviously, for certain guests or for certain situations where I have a dream guest that I really want to have on, I'm going to be much more accommodating. But I do believe in the idea of batching, especially if you're a busy professional or you have family or you've got other things. It's just way easier to coordinate. So yeah, I think for future reference, I would just like to kind of bang out like 3 episodes, do some recordings, have some awesome conversations. And then another tip or hack off of that is once you're done recording, you send it to a virtual assistant or an assistant or someone else to get all the other stuff done for you.
So the Happy Doc, Med Flash Go, MCAT Flash Go, SAT Flash Go, my sweetheart's an attorney. And I was wondering, like, if she wanted, I don't think she really wants to do this, but if she wanted, or if a listener's an attorney, could you help them create? What's the attorney? I should know.
Law Flash Go.
Isn't there like a certain, like the MCAT is the test for medical, right?
Right.
What's the bar? LSAT. Exactly. Yeah. Maybe you need to create the LSAT Flash Go. Maybe an attorney needs to reach out to you and you can support them or something.
Yeah. So that you've hit the nail on the head. We're really just trying to create really quick, simple, easy. We call it like the question of the day style pods. So we do one question of the day, Monday through Friday, and it's specific to that exam. And the goal is, you know, look, you're going to be studying for this exam. You're going to be super stressed. Here's 200 episodes. You can blaze through them, get some tips. different questions of how to tackle this exam. And that's just one, we call it a supplemental tool to the main tools out there. And a couple of these have really taken off, like the MCAT and the MedFlash Go, like the MedFlash Go podcast, and still early, is 25, 30,000 downloads a month. And it's been picking up speed and all that stuff. And we didn't start it that long ago. People are looking for resources like this.
Good stuff. So do you monetize any of these shows, or do you plan to monetize once your kingdom or your empire is created?
So we do want to monetize. We're still kind of debating different strategies for MedFlashGo because it has taken off. We've partnered with a couple of companies. So we actually hop on and do like webinars with one larger company that develops questions online. And so we do that. That's kind of the way we're monetizing with them. That's a perfect example, actually, on the monetization front of, we didn't technically get money from the podcast, but because the podcast gave us some notoriety or awareness, we've been able to partner with another company and then make money off of doing webinars. Like that's an offshoot from the podcast. So like monetization doesn't necessarily have to be directly from the podcast, but yeah, we'll probably throw in, we do have a couple of ads in there, which are like revenue share type models where we
like affiliate relationship.
Affiliate. Yeah. So we have a couple of like affiliate things going on. I've made some sponsorship money through the Happy Doc as well, through medical companies. But overall, our long-term goal is to reach something where we can go to a company and say, hey, look, our network, our kingdom,
I love it. You're owning it now.
Our kingdom has 2 million downloads a year or something, right? Or our kingdom has 5 million downloads a year. Our kingdom has X amount of downloads. What do you think that level of awareness might be worth for your company, right? And we do the pitch. So as you know, right, if you had like a real estate company, you're like, holy, this, they get 5 million downloads. That's going to be a lot of ears that might hear about X company. That starts to get the numbers and the dollars rolling.
Good stuff. So you mentioned what's next. That was actually a question that I was already going to ask you, but you've already mentioned it. So how about this? Let's end on a bang and think about the listener right now who is also a podcaster. They've either podcasted for probably less than 2 years and they're just not really seeing the traction that they wanted, or they're brand spanking new. They're about to launch. If you can think of that person and just pour into them, what do they need to do to get to the next level?
Yeah, I think whether you're brand new or even 2 years and you're still doing this thing, I think the number one thing is to be authentically excited and look forward to and plan out awesome guests or people or conversations that you want to have. Because I can tell you 100%, when I'm excited and I get to really learn, first off, the results don't matter, but the conversation is just so much better. And the quality of that conversation is going to be felt by the listener. And then that listener is going to go ahead and then share or be inspired or do whatever it is that your goal of your podcast is going to be. So I think you really just got to get into the zone and trust your process of being excited about what you're doing. And if you can maintain that, that's the energy that's going to let you be consistent over the long haul. And that's going to end up actually converting into success.
So you can find Taylor's network of podcasts. There's a lot of them. So I'll make sure that my team right now, pre-launch for this episode, like the Happy Doc, that'll be queued up. MedFlash Go, that'll be queued up. MCAT Flash Go, that'll be queued up. SAT Flash Go. All of these will be queued up already down into the show notes. So you can scroll down right now and click on any one of those, connect with Taylor there. Taylor, is there another way they can find you and get a hold of you besides your empire of podcasts?
Yeah, sure. You can send me an email if you're ever curious about any of this stuff. You can send me an email at thehappydoc1@gmail.com.
Happydocdigit1@gmail.com.
Correct.
That's in the show notes as well. Taylor, thanks for jumping on. I appreciate it. Thanks for going through and teaching us the difference between psychologists and psychiatrists, that you'll be able to prescribe medicine, talking about deadlifting, climbing, and mountain biking. And is it called pommel horse?
Pommel horse.
Pommel horse.
Yep.
Need to write that down. When I was like, I don't remember, I must have been 9-ish years old, I loved handstands. And on our playground, we had parallel bars. And I kid you not, I didn't do this on purpose, but I was swinging in order to do a handstand. Just, I wanted to do a handstand. Like I could hold it for like a half a second, which was fairly good. And I was not able to do it long enough. So I wanted to get lots of momentum. So I was swinging farther and I did a backflip, landed on my feet. And I was like, I'm not trying that again. Have you ever done that? Like, have you ever accidentally done a backflip on the parallel bars?
I've accidentally, I won't go into too many details, but I went for this one trick. It's called Diamandoff. It was one of my favorites on the parallel bars. And you basically swing up and you rotate on one arm and then you flip around and grab the bar again and finish in a handstand. And my arm buckled. That's the term we use. My arm buckled. So my elbow bent randomly. And I literally did like a flip backwards and split the bar, which is no fun as a guy. I will say I've randomly or mistakenly almost injured myself several times, but I wouldn't say I've randomly or mistakenly done a really cool trick. That's never happened.
I've thought to myself, as I was starting to flip on accident, I was like, oh crap, I'm going to die and everybody's going to make fun of me. And then I landed on my feet and I was like, what the heck?
Yeah.
People probably thought that I did that on purpose. So I'm just going to walk away like a badass. And I did.
Yeah.
And people probably didn't even watch because that's just what happens when it's good. They don't see you.
That's right.
Anyways, brother, thank you for jumping on. I want the listener to jump into the show notes. They'll see your email if they want to connect with you that way. And then they can find the Happy Doc podcast. The episode with me should be airing right around the time of this episode. So it'd probably be easy for you to go over there and find that at the Happy Doc. Taylor, Brana, thanks for jumping on. I'm going to let you go and we're out. This episode is brought to you by growyourshow.com. Grow Your Show lets you be the star of your show while we handle all the hard stuff. We offer reliable and affordable post-production services that allow you to grow your show organically without all the work. So go ahead and check out the website right now and feel free to schedule a call with me and let's take your show to the next level. Again, growyourshow.com. You just press record. We handle the rest.